Let's resume and finish the story we ended on yesterday. Go ahead and open your Bible first to Matthew chapter number 8, verse 29. But hopefully you've got markers for Mark chapter 5 and Luke chapter 8, because there's material, parallel material, in those passages that we'll want to reference today. You know the story. Jesus had a very busy day yesterday in our chronology, preaching, teaching, selecting his 12 apostles, things like that. He finishes the day at the shoreline in the boat by telling his disciples, let's go to the other side of the lake. And so that probably happened sunset, maybe later than sunset. And so they make a night crossing. That was the intention. And they had the storm incident, which was pretty bad, scared the disciples, the apostles, some of them professional fishermen, very, very badly. But what scared them even more was when Jesus stood up and treated the lake like a naughty dog and told it to shut up and lay down, and it did. And they said, who is this man that can command the wind and the waves and they obey him? Which, of course, begs the question, doesn't it? He's not just simply a man. He is God incarnate, and they are learning that bit by bit in their relationship with him. Now, after he's calmed the storm, they arrive at the other side. Now, it's only about 6 miles from the Capernaum Bethsaida shoreline over to the place that we know this next incident takes place. So it couldn't have taken them all night long, even if the storm slowed them down for a couple of hours. So they may have arrived at the eastern shoreline and then basically caught a good sleep in the boat until the sun came up. But we do know that when Jesus does get out of the boat, which happens on the south side of a place now known as Kursi, K-U-R-S-I. This is represented in our Mark and Luke text as Gersa. The Gadara thing from Matthew seems to be a scribal problem, which we know creeps in from time to time, has nothing to do with the inspiration of the scripture. So Kursi was probably a Jewish community, or may have been a Jewish and Gentile community that's just a couple of miles south on the eastern side of the Sea of Galilee, but a couple of miles south of where the Jordan River flows into the northern end of the Sea of Galilee. And Jesus lands, gets out of the boat somewhere south of Kursi, probably less than a mile, near the cemetery, near the graveyard, where he is immediately met by two demoniacs, but we only focus on the worse of the two, and that would be the guy called Legion, because he's got a whole bunch of demons that have control of his life. And this guy runs to Jesus and falls down and begins to beg him some things that we're about to talk about. Now, you have to keep in mind that the demon possession is the terminal state of a free will arrangement that was entered into by a human being with a demon or demons. But when the human wants to get out of the arrangement, the demon refuses to let them out and begins to abuse them, cause them to hurt themselves or hurt other people, and thereby bring a lot of negative blowback on themselves. And so when the person talks, sometimes it's the person, sometimes it's the demons talking through him. When the person acts, sometimes it's the person, sometimes it's the demons acting through the person, using him as a puppet. And the only way out of this mess is for an authoritative third party to step in and force the demons to relinquish their control, to allow the person to exercise their free will once again. And so it appears to me as if the man, the human being, somehow sees Jesus getting out of the boat in the very early morning hours and recognizes him, perhaps because of, you know, the sharing of information between the demons and himself, that this is someone very special. And so the man runs down there and falls down in front of Jesus, while the demons start doing the talking through the man. All right, so with all that background, let's read the text. Matthew 8:29. "Behold, they cried out, 'What have you to do with us, O Son of God?'" So you can see the identification by the demons of who Jesus really is. "Have you come here to torment us before the time?" Now, that's an interesting phrase because that matches some things we seem to know about demonic beings, fallen angels, that when all this war, the spiritual warfare, started, there has been a parole arrangement for the troublemaking angels, the troublemaking demons. They appear to be allowed to continue their interaction with humankind, provided they do not violate free will. That seems to be the case. And if they do violate free will, their parole can be revoked, and they could end up being sent to a place of spiritual confinement, which we'll talk about in just a moment here. So these demons in control of this guy are instantly afraid that Jesus may have arrived to revoke their parole, to torment them before the time. Let's read from Mark 5, verse 7 now. "Crying out with a loud voice, he said, 'What have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I adjure you by God, do not torment me.'" So the guy is, his voice is being used by the demons to express their concern that Jesus is here ahead of the agreed upon schedule of their punishment. And the reason they think he might here be causing trouble is because he's casting the demons out of this guy one at a time, evidently. Verse 8 says, "For he was saying," and the way it's expressed in the Greek is that he was saying it over and over and over and over again, "Come out of the man, you unclean spirit." And so eventually, verse number 9, Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" And he replied, "My name is Legion, for we are many." So these multitude of demons are going out one at a time as Jesus is rebuking them, relinquishing their control, but there's still plenty more left. So Jesus finally asks, "Who are you called? What's your name?" And they acknowledge, "Well, there's a bunch of us in here, so we go by the name Legion." Legion was the name for a military unit of about 6,000 or so people. So anyway, Jesus now realizes that this is a huge situation here with this guy. And they continue to beg him, verse 10, earnestly not to send them out of the country. Now, the parallel in Luke at this point is very instructive. Luke chapter 8, verse 31 says, "And they begged him not to command them to depart into the abyss." Now, the abyss is the place where demonic beings are confined until their final disposition of being sent to hell, into the lake of fire. So it is a place of torment and punishment, but mostly confinement, where they cannot have free range around planet Earth anymore. And so That's what these demons are afraid of. They are afraid that the presence of Jesus at this particular moment may signal that they're about to be sent to the abyss ahead of time, and that their parole will have been revoked, and they really don't want that. So Luke chapter 8, verse 32, since we're right there, says, "Now a large herd of pigs was feeding there on the hillside." Now we know where this takes place because there is about a mile south of Kersey this really steep slope that comes off of the hills above the eastern shore of the Sea of Galilee down into the very waters of the lake itself. It's cut through by the road that goes around on the east side of the river, of the lake, but you can still see it very easily as you're driving along, that it is super, super steep here. Don't expect to see a cliff. I remember growing up in the church hearing this story, being told about the cliffs that the pigs jumped off of into the lake, and that's how I pictured it, was like cliff diving pigs. But that's not the way that the text goes, and that's certainly not the geography of the region. It's just a super, super steep slope into the lake itself. So anyway, these pigs are grazing on the hillside at this particular place near the cemetery. Now, some people are like, what are Jewish people doing keeping pigs? It's not Jewish people keeping the pigs. This region is the borderland between the Jewish areas of Galilee and the Gentile areas of the Decapolis. Now, there are some Gentiles that live in the majority Jewish country of Galilee, but there are also Jewish people who live in the majority Gentile area of the Decapolis. Decapolis just means 10 cities, a reference to 10 Greek cities, 9 of which are basically in the modern state of Jordan, east of the Sea of Galilee, east of the Jordan River. And so these pigs are being kept by Gentiles, either out of Kersey itself or possibly out of the city of Hippos, which was one of the 10 cities, one of the Decapolis, which is only 3 miles south of Kersey, 2 miles south of the very site that we're talking about right now. So whoever it is, Kersites or Hippites, these pigs are being kept by Gentiles. And so the demons ask permission for something to happen. It says, they begged him, meaning Jesus, to let them enter these pigs. And so he gave them permission. Now, why do they want to go into the pigs? That can be answered on a lot of different levels, like as in, is it because they can't stand to not have something to control in this world? Or I think it's more likely that they just wanted to cause trouble before they went out looking for their next human to make a deal with. But Jesus lets them enter the pigs. And it says that the demons came out of the man, and they entered the pigs, and the herd rushed down the steep bank into the lake and was drowned. We are told that there were about 2,000 pigs in this herd of pigs. So that's a lot of pigs drowning at the exact same moment. A big loss of revenue. And we're told in verse 34 of Luke, since were there, Luke 8:34, when the herdsmen saw what had happened, they fled and told it in the city and in the country. So whether they went into Kersey, just a mile north, or down in Hippos, 2 miles south, whoever it was that owned the pigs were informed of their loss and of the circumstances around the loss. And this causes a great big crowd of people, most of which were probably Gentiles, to come out to the site of this pig disaster. Verse 35, then people went out to see what had happened, and they came to Jesus and found the man from whom the demons had gone sitting at the feet of Jesus, clothed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. So they come out and they see something that they have not been able to see for quite some time, and that is this crazy guy, this demon-possessed guy that made it hard to travel this road. There was a Roman road that went along the eastern shore of the Sea of Galilee, and it was highly traveled. But this little section that went past that cemetery area, cut through the little steep run down into the lake, that area was a little bit dicey because this guy was out there hurting people every once in a while. And so now that guy looks perfectly fine. He had originally been ripping his clothes off, but now he's actually wearing clothing. And so they're scared by this sudden change in circumstances. Now, those who had seen it told them how the demon-possessed man had been healed. So the herdsmen, the hired hands, more than likely, that had been taking care of the pigs, explain how we were here taking care of the pigs on the side of the hill like we always do, minding our own business. And we saw over there, not too far from us, that crazy guy, the demon-possessed guy, talking to that man right over there, that Jesus fellow. And as they were talking, suddenly our pigs went crazy. And they ran into the lake and drowned. And the only thing that makes sense is that that guy over there is the one that made it happen. It seems to be as if the possession of that man suddenly got transferred to the pig. So something like that must have been in the explanation. And that was enough. That was enough for these people, probably Gentiles again, to make their mind up that Jesus was persona non grata. He was an unwanted person. So verse 37, then all the people of the surrounding country of the Gerasenes, there's our word that has the idea of Kersey in it, asked him to depart from them, for they were seized with great fear. So they want Jesus out of there. They don't want any more of his disastrous presence, something that cuts into their economy, their life, and scares them because it changes things that they'd already kind of gotten used to. Now, the demon-possessed man then asks Jesus to take him along with him. Verse 38 says, well, actually, let's read verse 30, the rest of 37. So he got into the boat and returned. Now, he's not been here very long. This whole story that we've just read must have started somewhere shortly after the sun came up, because the guy would have had to have been able to see Jesus. And then it's over with pretty quickly, and the people come out, and it can't be more than a couple of miles at the most that they're coming out from. So probably no more than a couple of hours would Jesus have been on shore. And now he's being told, get out of our country. Leave. And so he's getting ready to leave. Verse 38 says, "The man from whom the demons had gone out begged that he might be with him." So the man wants to now become a personal follower of Jesus. Does that surprise you? Doesn't surprise me a bit. We know that many of Jesus' followers are beneficiaries of some change in their lives. Mary Magdalene is a good example of that. Seven demons cast out of her, and then she became a very ardent follower of Jesus. So that's what this guy wants to do. He wants to follow along with Jesus. He wants to get in the boat and go back to Galilee with him. But Jesus has got other plans for him. And for those, I want to go to the Mark 5 passage, Mark 5:19. It says, "He did not permit him, but said to him, 'Go home to your friends and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you.'" So Jesus basically says, "No, I don't want you to go with me. I want you to instead go back to where you came from, back into your hometown, back into the place you grew up, the place that you left whenever you started to get involved in all this occultic stuff that ended up with you becoming demon-possessed. And I want you to go back and be a witness to everyone about how God saved you." So he's turning him into an evangelist back in his hometown. Now we can then appreciate where his hometown is located, because it says in verse 20, "And he went away and began to proclaim in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and everyone marveled." So he must have been perhaps from Hippos, which is only just a couple of miles away, or possibly Gerasa, which would be a few more miles to the south of Hippos, or one of the other cities that was majority Gentile, but also had Jewish communities. My suspicion is that this man is Jewish, that he already had a basic understanding of who God the Lord was, but had gotten away from that into this occultic stuff that ended up with him being demon-possessed. And now all that's been reversed. It's his responsibility at Jesus' command to go back and let everybody know about his repentance and about how he was saved by the mercy of God. And that's exactly what it does. And people all over the place start hearing from him how Jesus changed his life. At this point, Mark tells us that Jesus had gotten, when he'd got, verse 21, "When Jesus had crossed again in the boat to the other side, a great crowd gathered around him, and he was beside the sea." So basically, we've turned around and sailed back to the exact same spot we left last night on the chronology. It's only about 6 miles, so it doesn't take very long. So Jesus is going to arrive back probably mid-morning, certainly before noon, on the day after that great busy day of the Sermon on the Mount, the Sermon of the Parables, and things of that nature. Now, here we can go back to Matthew chapter 9 as the parallel. It says, "Getting into a boat, he crossed over and came to his own city." Now, his own city in this context is not Nazareth. Nazareth is 20 miles plus away from the shores of the Sea of Galilee. It's not one of the seaside cities. So the reference here is clearly to the city of Capernaum. That's where he's gone back to. And it says in Luke chapter 8, verse 40, "Now when Jesus returned, the crowd welcomed him, for they were all waiting for him." Now again, this should not surprise us, because Jesus left the night before on the boat, probably as the sun went down, or maybe in the as the light starts fading after sunset, Jesus sails away toward the east, the southeast, actually. And so these guys have been waiting, wondering, well, when's he going to get back? When's he going to show back up? So they're kind of keeping an eye out for when he returns so that they can all get back to what they'd been doing right as he left, which was he's preaching and teaching, and they're come and getting miracles from him. Which brings us now to Mark chapter 2. And this is where we'll set up for tomorrow's story. It says, when he returned to Capernaum after some days. Now, that English translation kind of gives the impression that we're talking about several days. But actually, I think the Greek indicates a two-day period, meaning like an overnight period. And that's what we're talking about here. So basically, when he came back a day later. And so it was reported that he was at home. So he's back at the place that he's been living, and he's actually back in a specific house. Now, I'm going to give you my opinion here. That's all it's worth. I think he's at Peter's house, because Peter's house was certainly at or near Capernaum. I think it's actually between Capernaum and Bethsaida, which is where Peter was born and grew up, in Bethsaida. It's only a less than a two-mile range between those two cities. A lot of Jesus' ministry has been happening in that area along the shore just immediately west of Capernaum. So I think Peter's house is probably somewhere in that range, and I think that's where Jesus has come back to. Now, here is the last thing we want to read before we finish today. It says, many were gathered together so that there was no more room, not even at the door, and he was preaching the word to them. So everybody's jammed in while Jesus teaches in the house.